You're listening to This Naked Mind with Annie Griss.
Hi, this is Annie Grace, and welcome to This Naked Mind podcast. And I'm here with Susan. Hi, Susan, how are you?
Hi, Annie. Great, thanks.
Great. So good to be with you. So why don't you sort of start from the beginning and take us back in your journey with alcohol? Where did it all start for you?
Well, I'm Irish, and I grew up in the countryside in Ireland, in Donegal, and it's just a pretty normal childhood, I guess. Alcohol was just, you know, a normal part of life. My dad liked a pint, and my mom was more of a G&T at Christmas kind of person, you know. And like, there's nothing, you know, shocking or surprising. You know, pubs in Ireland are pretty family friendly. You know, a lot of them will have like a changing table, and it'd be kids menus, and it's not surprising or shocking to see kids running around the pubs. And we would go to the pub with my father, and you know, there was nothing strange about that. I was a very shy child, and very self-conscious, and I was like tall and big for my age, and I was like constantly getting comments to sort of, you know, oh, you're a big girl, aren't you? And like, oh, she's very sensitive, isn't she? That sort of thing that I would take very, you know, to heart, and sort of, you know, yeah, make it all up, you know, there's something wrong with me that I shouldn't be like this, you know. And so, you know, growing up, teenage years, the usual, you know, living in the country, we would all sort of pile into cars at the weekends and minibuses and stuff and head off to, you know, the disco. And I guess I, at that age, sort of started realizing that I was interested in like the effect the alcohol seemed to be having on the other people who were going a bit mad and like really letting their hair down, you know, and being so shy. It sort of, it was interesting to me. And my first sort of big experience with alcohol was actually like by myself. I'd been out some evening, and got home late as usual, and I just like swiped a bottle of horrible blue nun wine, like horrible stuff, from my parents' drinks cabinet, and I went upstairs and I just drank it all in my room. And I remember thinking, like, I was, you know, what's the story with this? Like, what's the big deal? And so I like drank it in the space of, I don't know, something very quick. And it ended, as you can imagine, not very well. And it was like a scene from Ghostbusters or something in my room had been, you know. My mom then the next day came up in the morning, and she was like, oh, who bought you all that drink? And, you know, what happened? And I said, well, it was me. I did it myself. And, you know, so I felt silly and stupid for doing that. But at the same time, I was like, oh, I just didn't know how to drink. I just didn't know how to drink properly, you know. So I kind of, you know, as the time went on, sort of practiced, I guess, you know, the way teenagers do as you go into getting into adulthood. This is like typical teenage drinking, I guess, the weekends, no holds barred, you know. And then when I went off to college, I was too young basically to go to college. I was ill-equipped and sort of lacked the skills to live away from home. And I was very quickly overwhelmed and disorganized, and it was kind of my own worst enemy as well. You know, I rather than, I guess, the lack of confidence, you know, the lack of sort of, yeah, self-esteem, I would rather not hand in a paper than hand in a paper and risk getting a bad grade or bad, you know, or comments from the professor or something. And so I kind of discovered at the same time that I felt like I fit in better in the college bar, you know. So I spent quite a bit of time there when I should have been studying. And then while I was at college, my father became ill, And he passed away quite quickly after that, in the space of a few months, really. And by that time, I was like 18, 19. And I, in my wisdom, figured, well, I'm an adult, so I should be able to, you know, deal with this. I took some time out of college, but at the same time, I completely like avoided the situation and didn't process, you know, what happened. I didn't really grieve properly, I think. And then when I went back to college, I sort of, well, now I can say unsurprisingly, had, you know, bouts of depression and the anxiety and really not coping very well. So I was having medication for depression and then drinking at the same time to try and, you know, stay in the college vibe and try and, you know, not sort of stay in my own head and get out and everything. So there was, you know, one side it was like, great, I don't have to think about this and I don't have to worry about feeling depressed because I'll just take these pills. And then, you know, and then I was like, well, I'll just go out and drink and have fun. And I don't have to worry about anything, you know. So that, I suppose, as you can imagine, probably didn't enter my college career, didn't enter really, you know, prestigiously. I didn't do great at school. I sort of then in my 20s, my early 20s, sort of fell into an expat life. I had a couple of stints abroad, working abroad. And then I sort of accidentally ended up staying in Paris. I'd been over to visit my sister who was here, and I just ended up staying, as many foreigners do. And I guess, as you can imagine, expat life is, you know, as the stereotype of an expat, you know, we all get together over drinks. It's like lots of going out, and you know, it's there's a big expat social scene. And I suppose if you put a bunch of people from all over the world who, you know, believe the same thing, that, you know, you can only make friends or you only fit in over a glass of wine or a cocktail, then, you know, it's gonna create a big drinking scene. So So my early 20s, it was, you know, going out and parties, and I sort of trying to, you know, felt like I fit in well, you know, with the Irish kind of stereotype, I suppose, of the drinker and always ready for a party and a bit of crack. And, you know, that sort of fits in well with the whole expat scene. And so that was quite, you know, that was quite useful for me. At the same time, then my mental health wasn't great, but I was, you know, ignoring it and kind of had this sort of, oh, well, I'm just a disaster, you know, in a kind of a jokey sort of way. But anyway, that was my kind of, I suppose, my way of coping. Even though, you know, I mean, I suppose like a lot of Irish people do, it's got sort of, if drinking is going to be a part of your culture, if you like, it's, you often wonder, am I drinking too much at the same time, you know? So I often had that thought, I think I should be drinking less, but but how would I do that? How, you know, so I just pushed it to the back of my mind. Then after a couple of years, I met my husband. And so we fell in love and started settling down. I suppose my drinking got a bit more sophisticated in my eyes, more switching more to the French wines and more sort of dinner parties rather than you know, going out all the time and settling down and heading into our 30s. And so when we decided to move in together, he'd like almost immediately got transferred abroad. So I found myself in the suburbs sort of by myself. My friends were in Paris and I was out there, and my boyfriend was off in a different country now. And I found myself alone for the first time. I realized I'd never lived alone. And I had sort of been doing all I could to not be by myself. And I remember hearing you say that once, Annie, that you made it so you were never quite by yourself, so you weren't thinking too much.
Yeah.
And I realized that, of course, looking back, it's always clearer. But I remember I even had a job where I finished at like 4 p.m. on a Friday. And rather than sort of go home, I would go straight to the bar and just wait for my friends, you know. So I like did everything to not be by myself. So this was the first time I ended up sort of alone with my thoughts and alone by myself. And I did not like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's, I would start then picking up a wine on the way home and take it home with me. But I would still have this feeling of like, you know, it's like one of the rules, you know, you don't drink in the morning, you don't drink by yourself. And I sort of had that, I was like, oh, I really, you know, I deserve a glass of wine, but I probably shouldn't be drinking by myself. And even though I wasn't quite sure why, but this is one of the rules, you know. And I remember actually, this dates me a lot though, but I remember watching Sex in the City and seeing Samantha coming home from a hard day's shopping or something and standing in her kitchen, opening a bottle of wine and having a glass of wine by herself in her kitchen. And I remember thinking, oh, we can do that now. Okay, that's fine then. It's, you know, it was sort of okay for me then. So we find the reasons wherever wherever we look, you know. Nicola, my husband, eventually came back from Germany and we settled down together and we started a family and had our first son. And I guess we were just, you know, normal drinking with dinner. It's wine, it's France, you know, why wouldn't we have wine? And when we had our son, it was kind of my first time really feeling like a foreigner, you know. I felt different all over again. I felt like I was going to have to fit in all over again. And that sort of, there was sort of, you know, the conflicting messages, like I'm doing it wrong. They don't do it like that here. And, you know, all the, like the school and admin and everything. And then, you know, misunderstanding things. And I just felt like, you know, I'm not getting it right. Already with the pressure of parenthood and then all these, you know, added layers, I was just like, oh, disaster. I'm supposed to be getting, if I don't get anything right, it's got to be this thing, you know, parenthood. And I guess that was sort of like the start of the mummy wine thing as well. Like, oh, we expat moms would get together and like complain about, you know, life in France over a glass of wine and stuff. So it was kind of our, you know, group. And I guess all the while I still had that kind of niggling voice that I shouldn't, now my mom, I shouldn't be, you know, I shouldn't be drinking like every evening, I shouldn't be having a glass of wine, you know, at lunch, what have you. And but anyway, I carry on with life. And surprise, the next thing was we had twins. So that was kind of like a whole new level of tired and a whole new level of exhausted. They never slept at the same time. And, you know, there was always somebody crying. And a lot of the time it was me as well. But, you know, exhaustion, I guess, from lack of sleep. And then I was having wine with my dinner in the evening, as my reward, as my treat, like as my way of, you know, trying to end the day. This is my thing now. And so I guess that carried on for a few years. And, you know, with the exhaustion and the lack of sleep and, you know, working and being a mom to three kids and drinking so regularly, I just didn't know that it was making the tiredness worse. I was waking up at 3 a.m. in the middle of the night with my heart just pounding, like really horrible, crippling anxiety, and then start the day again a couple of hours later, as same as you said. It's like that's what, one of the things that spoke to me is the fact that she she knows about the 3 a.m. thing. And yeah, so it just sort of kept on, and I kept feeling worse and worse. But you know, it was like really just so frustrating and confusing. And you know, I didn't even have the vocabulary to explain what was going on. You know, I was just in my head the whole time, thinking I shouldn't be drinking like this. It was never I shouldn't be drinking at all. It was always I should be drinking less. And I'm a bad mother, and I'm a bad wife, I'm not doing anything right. And then I'm just like in that like whirlwind the whole time, every day the same. And that's when I started, like I actually went to my doctor and said, I feel terrible. And she knew, of course, I was still on antidepressants and anti-anxiety. And I said to her, I really think I'm drinking too much, but I can't seem to stop. And she had no answer for me. She just asked me like, well, what does your husband think? And so I was like, yeah, well, I don't know. And that was when I started like looking online for how do you reduce your drinking? How do you drink less? How can you only have 2 glasses of wine? That sort of thing. And I was looking, and I just wasn't finding something that spoke to me. And I was on some sort of Facebook group or something, you know, scrolling through one of those groups about, you know, people trying to drink less, and nothing was, no program or no group appealed to me. None of it spoke to me. And I wish I kept her name, but somebody, a woman, had put a comment in one of these Facebook groups going, oh, you must check out Annie Grace. And I was like, oh, who's this Annie Grace woman? So I Googled you, and it was everything you said about the 3 a.m. wake up, the like, I want to stop, but I don't know how, and the confusion and the frustration and all that. And I was like, oh, she's my person. And I started listening to all your podcasts, and which is, so I find it quite amazing that I'm here talking to you today. When I think of all the walks I did with you in my ears, you know, listening to you and reading all the Quitlet and everything, but I was still drinking. I was nodding away with my glass of wine in my hand going, yeah, I totally agree, but still drinking. I couldn't quite get that. I couldn't quite make that step. I couldn't get that sort of one evening without wine, without forcing it, you know, without feeling terrible. And then you did a webinar, and it was for the path in 2020. And I signed up for that straight away, and really haven't looked back since. That was really got me, you know, really got me on my path to figuring this whole thing out and understanding what was happening. And it was joining a community of people who like really understood. And you know, I said I wasn't even able to articulate. I hadn't got the vocabulary. And when I joined the path, and there were all these people like saying it out loud, I feel terrible. I said I wasn't going to drink, and then I did. And I was like, people are like saying this out loud, you know. And it took me a while, but I then was able to like find the words for what I was feeling, and how, you know, how alcohol was affecting me and my life, and had become just way too important. And that's all I wanted to do, was make it less important, and, you know, not care so much that it was there all the time, not care that there was wine on the table. And there was no pressure. There was no pressure to stop drinking. There was, with the pause, all that work in the pause, with the really examining, like, what's going on? What am I thinking? And it was just invaluable for me. And then it was right before my birthday. we'd gone through all at work, and I started an alcohol experiment. And I just couldn't believe it. It was just, I was like, I'm doing this. Look at me after all these years, you know. And it was amazing. And I think I had a data point after a couple of months, and it was like proving to myself that, yeah, no, you don't want to do this anymore, you know. So it was amazing. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Wow, what a great story. So how then has it been for you, sort of, you know, going out socially and with friends and family and stuff like that?
Oh, well, it was a bit awkward, I suppose, at the beginning. It's always going to be awkward doing something new for the first time. I mean, I probably hadn't gone out and not drunk since I was like in my early teens, you know. So it's always a bit awkward, but that was that's the beauty of it, is like recognizing, oh, I'm nervous about this, so this is important to me, you know. So I really want to succeed. I don't want to, you know, I really want to go out and not have a drink. And then after 5 minutes, you're there, you're doing it, you're talking to people, and you know, the worry, or the, you know, the awkward feeling kind of wears off. And and I realized, you know, it was interesting for people at the beginning, because I was someone who always had a glass of wine in their hand, they were like, really? You? And it's like, yeah, but I feel so great. I'm great. I'll just have the Perrier, thank you. And after a while, nobody cares. They don't even notice anymore, you know.
Well, that's so cool. You said something at the very beginning when you were talking about, you know, being in France, and you were like, we're in France, why wouldn't we have wine? And I just found it so interesting that we don't even notice that thought, right? Like, I remember that feeling of just not, well, I don't even remember it as a feeling. It was almost as if it was just so natural and expected. Mm-hmm. That once you're an adult, once you're at work, you're ordering this thing to drink. It's almost something that's, unless you make a conscious effort to not do it, you're going to do it, which is so fascinating, right? I'm trying to think of, are there other things like that, you know, that unless we're consciously deciding not to, it's just kind of what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And it's just, and even like growing up in Ireland, and like the pub culture there, it's the same. It's like, oh, of course you'll have a drink. You know, you're not going to go to the pub and not have a drink. You know, it's just part, you know, why would you even do that? So it's like, why would you have dinner without wine? Even like there's a quote from President Macron, who said dinner's a little bit sad without wine. So, you know, it's like, it's just so, you know, so part of life, isn't it? Unless you make it not part of life.
Right, right. And it's interesting that it's kind of the default, right? And yeah, anyway, I just find that just super fascinating. So you found freedom, and yeah, let us know what happened next.
After the path, I decided that if I had been standing in my kitchen at midnight, you know, telling myself to go to bed but having another glass of wine, that there were other people doing that too, and other people who weren't able to, you know, sort of articulate what was going on for them, that you know, that maybe I could help someone, you know, go to bed and stop pouring the wine. So I did your coach certification, which was amazing. Another level deeper. So it was amazing. So I certified through the Institute. Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. And so, and how has that been going for you?
Oh, great. Funnily enough, I've been working with Irish women mostly. So, so yeah, it's very rewarding, and it's been amazing. Yeah.
That's very cool. Is there a big appetite to change? In Ireland?
In Ireland, I think awareness is slowly growing. Like I said, the pub culture is huge, so I think it's challenging for people who want to drink less or do something else. Like that, you really have to like find your people, make an effort to do something else. You know, if you want to stay away from the whole pub scene. And I know from talking to people that they find it difficult that you know, the social life will revolve around the pub, especially in the early days if you're trying to drink less, and then you know it can have an effect that way. But it's a small little movement that's growing, same as in France. You know, it's becoming more and more in the news, and the dry months, you know, like the sober October and dry January, are definitely gaining momentum every year. There are more and more people doing it. So experimenting, you know, so
That's
it's
so
nice
cool.
to see.
That's amazing. So let me ask you the question, Susan, that I ask at the end of this podcast, which are, first of all, as a certified coach, where can people find you if they're curious about your coaching?
Sharp Sense Coaching is my website. Dot
Sharp.
com. Sharpsensecoaching.com.
Very cool. Very cool. And if you were going to go back in time and talk to your past self about kind of what life is like now, what would you tell her?
It's a difficult one because there's so much I could say. I go back to me and you know, every decade. I think I would go back to my teenage self and give her a big hug and tell her that she doesn't need to change herself, like that she's fine. And you know, trying to change yourself with alcohol is like making everything more difficult. Yeah, as a teenager, then I'd probably turn around and slam the door and tell myself I didn't know anything about it. Yeah, I mean, I think it's if I had realized, you know, that it was the wine was making everything infinitely more difficult, you know, my actual life hasn't changed that much. I'm still living in the same place. I have the same husband, the same kids, the same challenges, you know, the same things going on, but the way I live my life is just so much better. I'm just like I'm in it, not just in my head, you know. So I think that's huge for me. And I would love to tell my younger self that
Yeah, I love
that's
that.
the way it can be.
Oh, that's just incredible. Well, so great. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Susan. It's been so wonderful to hear your story and how it's all gone for you. It's just amazing.
Oh, thank you, Annie. Thanks for everything.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you're ready to see how This Naked Mind can help you on your personal health and wellness journey and want to learn more, go to thisnakedmindpodcast.com to learn what your next best step is. Again, that's thisnakedmindpodcast.com. We have all of our free resources, programs, social links, and more available for you there. Plus, if you have your own naked life story to share, you can submit it there as well. Until next week, stay curious.